This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 31st of January 2025. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I introduce the readers for this week: Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. Well, we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 86 1229. That's again 01 962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. And you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. Recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list right at the top of the page. You can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on Awaz Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. and you can listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. And so on with our headline stories, the first from Margaret, please.
Council sells off ramshackle shop. Empty building was left to rot for 20 years. Prominent but dilapidated buildings left to rot in Winchester High Street have gone on the market 10 years after the City Council announced plans to revamp them. A for sale sign was put up outside 158 and 159 High Street on the Broadway on Friday, January the 24th, days after the council was criticised by planning consultant Ian Tate for lack of action on the site. At a cabinet meeting on Wednesday, January the 22nd, Mr. Tate said that the council, which owns the listed Georgian building, had lost out on approximately £600,000 over the past 9 years due to failures to capitalise on it. Mr. Tate said, with prime retail space being in such great demand in Winchester, it is staggering that councillors have just left these two properties to rot. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, told Mr. Tate that he had asked officers to market the building. We have repeatedly looked at potential businesses, but those businesses have not proved to such that we can justify the use of public money to do so. In light of that, I have also asked officers to market the building, because if we are not prepared to do something about it, and we have checked whether our partner in the Central Winchester Regeneration Project sees it as a future part of that scheme, and they do not. I agree with you completely that the idea of hanging on to it and doing nothing is not an option. As previously reported, the council said that it would revamp 158 to 159 High Street in 2015, demolishing the dividing wall between the two units to create a single shop, which would be served by a new two-storey extension to the rear. However, these plans never went ahead, with the Chronicle reporting in 2022 that the estimated cost of the revamp had jumped from a predicted £500,000 to £800,000. Speaking to the Chronicle, Mr. Tate, formerly a city councillor, said, "The council have had it for 10 years and have made zero use of it. It is scandalous that it has been left. It needs particular ownership." There is a real theme that the council do not look after their estates, Thus, it is not much different from River Park or the Corner House. It is a bit of a real theme that they do not look after their properties very well. The council has been frequently criticised for the poor state of the building near the bus station and opposite the Tourist Information Centre across the Broadway at the Guildhall. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, 158 to 159 High Street has been empty for a long time, and we understand that this Grade 2 listed building will require extensive work to bring it back into use. We will watch with interest to see what happens here. The property is now being sold through the commercial arm of Goadsby for an undisclosed sum. Grade 2 listed Georgian buildings in Winchester often sell for seven-figure sums, but the market value of these pair will be hit by the cost of renovation. Councillor Todd, in a statement yesterday, said, "We're doing this because we think it's the best way to get the building back into use." The council bought the shop in 2018 from Henderson's, the previous developer for Silver Hill, alongside several other buildings on the Broadway. But we never managed to find a way to make it work economically. It's a listed building and needs a lot of work. What it needs is a property developer with the right experience. We have some great independent shops and businesses in that area of the High Street, and if we can get the building open again, I'd love to see another one join them.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
Burglary spate sparks warning. Winchester residents are being urged to be on their guard following recent burglaries. This warning comes from police after a trio of burglaries which took place on January the 21st and are believed to be linked. The first burglary was in Mount Pleasant, Kingsworthy between 8:45 a.m. and 3:15 p.m. Burglars searched the property and stole jewellery. The next took place in Goring Field between 3 p.m. and 7:30 p.m., which also saw the targeted property searched and jewellery stolen. The third was in Cundall Way, Kingsworthy, at around 7 p.m. During this burglary, the suspects were disturbed by a neighbour and made off in a vehicle towards Springvale Road. Officers arrested two men in Oxford on Monday, January the 27th. A 36-year-old man from Wellingborough, Northamptonshire, and a 28-year-old man from Craigavon, Northern Ireland, were arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to commit burglary with intent to steal. The pair have been bailed with conditions pending further inquiries. They are being linked to burglaries in Alton and Basingstoke. Police investigating the Winchester raids said, We've conducted a number of inquiries and are appealing for any witnesses. Were you in the area at the time? Did you notice anything suspicious? Do you have relevant CCTV or doorbell footage that could help? We're particularly keen to hear from anyone with dash cam footage who was travelling on the B3407 London Road, the A33 or Loveton Lane towards the A333 between 6:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. on January the 21st. Anyone with information can call 101 or report via the Constabulary website. Police also want to remind citizens of their burglary prevention advice. Shut all windows and lock them when you're not using the room at night and when you leave your property. Lock all front and rear doors at night and when you're out. If you have a UPVC door with a multi-point lock, ensure you lift the handle and lock it with the key. Remove the key after the door or window is locked. Put all car keys and other keys out of sight and not in reach of windows and letterboxes. It doesn't take much for the keys to be hooked through the letterbox. Place your keyless car keys in a Faraday pouch, which can block signals, meaning would-be opportunists can't copy your car key and gain entry to your vehicle.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Doubts over future of 230-year-old chain store. The future of one of Winchester's oldest shops is in question following the announcement that 500 branches will be sold by its parent company. WH Smith has announced that it is in talks to sell the 500 shops, which make up its high street operation, some of which opened more than 230 years ago. This includes the branch in Winchester High Street, which first opened approximately 100 years ago. WH Smith said, WH Smith confirms that it is exploring potential strategic options for this profitable and cash-generative part of the group, including a possible sale. Over the past decade, WH Smith has become a focused global travel retailer. The group's travel business has over 1,200 stores across 32 countries, and three-quarters of the group's revenue and 85% of its trading profit comes from the travel business. There can be no certainty that any agreement will be reached, and further updates will be provided as and when appropriate. Professor Sarah Montano, Professor of Retail Marketing at Birmingham University, told the BBC that the future was very uncertain. It will require some strategic thinking to show how they would be different in what they offer customers. She said WH Smith's heyday was the 1980s, but many of the goods sold then are now not needed or sold elsewhere. Nationally, WH Smith has 500 branches and 5,000 employees. The Winchester branch of WH Smith is one of 200 branches, which also has a post office. Winchester residents are frustrated by the news. David Miles, 76, said, "I'm pretty cheesed off. It's been there all my life. This is a place where we've always gone. It's absolutely mad. It's like the Russell and Bromley. That was a butcher for a long time, since I was a kid." Christopher Beanland, 61, has lived in Winchester since 2021. He said, "This is where I always get my paper from. Every Monday or Sunday, I come down here and get my non-league papers. If it gets sold, I'll probably have to go to a different news agent. It's convenient. If they shut it, it'll be a shame, but I'll just have to go to another news agent. I bet their reasoning for putting them up for sale is the internet, but I don't use that, and from people like me who have still older phones, it isn't great."
Thank you, Jackie. I think just to clarify, I don't think Russell and Bromley were ever a butcher's. I think the butchers preceded Russell and Bromley in the house. Anyway, my headline story is marked "Tree Marks 130 Years for Park." A small tree has been planted in St Giles Hill Park to mark the start of work on the site 130 years ago. The park, which was established in 1894, was the brainchild of H.E. Milner, one of the most prominent designers of the time. The area was gifted to the city by the Earl of Northbrook, who was thanked by the then mayor, Thomas Stopher. The original section of the park was made to Milner's plans, has been kept largely the same since, with curved pathways and flowering trees and shrubs. The area is enclosed with railings and has four lockable gates, created by Jewell and Sons. To commemorate the establishment of the park, which happened in January 1895, the current Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, planted a tree on Saturday, January the 25th. The tree was placed next to a spot indicated on the original Milner plan. The occasion was particularly significant for the mayor, who previously had a career as a landscape architect. Following the planting, he spoke about the importance of parks and the need for more livable urban spaces. He said, "An overall park plan is needed and becoming ever more urgent due to the changing climate. Kew Gardens are planting trees right now in anticipation that by 2090, climate change will mean a loss of over 50% of their current trees." He also praised the voluntary groups such as Friends of St Giles Hill Park, who organised the event. More than 30 friends were joined by MP Danny Chambers and councillors Rachel Aaron and Nathan Eve, who were keen to show their support. Sally Miller and Janet Hurrell of the Hampshire Gardeners Trust were also there. The Trust recognises the importance of the park and featured research on it in their most recent magazine. Right, well, we now move on as usual to the death notices, starting with Margaret, please.
Alexander, Peter Herbert Alexander of Chandler's Ford, in the 95th year of his life.
Biggs, Anne Biggs, on the 17th of January, aged 90.
Chandler, John Edward Chandler, peacefully on the 16th of January, aged 91.
Cox, Ronald Sidney Cox, peacefully 11th of January, aged 92.
Fairweather, Barry Fairweather, peacefully at home, 16th of December, aged 87.
Hughes, William Kilpatrick Hughes, known as Bill, peacefully at home on the 7th of January, aged 81.
Leach, Derek Leach, peacefully on Friday the 27th of December, aged 95.
Parker, Mary Parker, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, 21st of December, aged 94.
Sprott, Edward Thomas Sprott, quietly at home from MND.
Starks, Emily Louisa Starks, peacefully at West Home Nursing Home on the 18th of January, aged 102.
Woodham, Henry Woodham, known as Nigel, peacefully at Mountbatten, Hampshire, 12th of January, aged 88.
Thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment, read by Jackie, please.
And it's entitled, If This Is Where It Ends, I Am Fulfilled. In November 2023, I was 6 weeks into a 9-month programme of spiritual exercises from St. Ignatius, a retreat in daily life, to intentionally go deeper in my faith. We had begun by simply focusing on what it was to know that we are loved by God and to love him back. Ignatius highlights the challenge of attaching to things which are otherwise good but can easily distract, encouraging believers to adopt an indifference towards anything that is not the love of God. It's a radical and challenging invitation and yet incredibly releasing. I wondered how Ignatius, writing well over 400 years ago, could have predicted the things I would worry about, like how long I would live for, whether I would be thought of as successful, and how I could afford to retire comfortably. Ignatius describes how the blessings of our lives, like relationships, health, success, career, financial wealth, beauty, should not be thought of as either good or bad, but held lightly, indifferently, and secondarily to love for God and awareness of his love. The Apostle Paul affirms, everything else is worthless when compared with the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. Philippians 3:8. My response was to write a poem describing my intention to live from a place of healthy indifference. I had no idea that this would be tested almost immediately with a lymphoma diagnosis. The doctors told me my cancer was treatable, but there was uncertainty, and the timing felt significant. In the midst of the most challenging season of my life, I chose to concentrate on being loved by God and loving him back, and allowing everything else to become secondary. The treatment worked, and I am cancer-free, but my faith was significantly deepened by the experience, and the poem reminds me of a very precious season. I share it here as an encouragement to others. If this is where it ends. If this is where it ends, then I am fulfilled, for I am deeply loved and always have been, held in the long loving gaze of the Father who made me, the Son who saved me, and the Spirit who leads me. My years so far have been a journey of discovery, a disentangling of identity, a loosening of expectations, a letting go of condemnation, and an ever-growing sense of being known and being loved unfailingly, unconditionally, and an invitation to serve and love passionately, creatively, fruitfully, faithfully. A legacy of God in me, poured out in my community. And if there's more than only joy I see as the child in me becomes ever more free to be unhindered and unfettered, soulfully and spiritually. And health or wealth, success or longevity, can be lightly held, accepting that they don't define me, as each of their challenges presents an opportunity to learn to love and to be loved more completely, with more of him and less of me. And that's from Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you, Jackie. We now go on to letters to the editor, starting with Margaret, please.
No place on the menu for foie gras. This is a letter from A.P. Lodge. Your article chronicled January the 16th about the Ferrari McLaren, whose owners arrogantly think our parking regulations don't apply to them, made me take a second look at the Margot Lounge Bar there and its menu. I was frankly disgusted to see it is selling foie gras. Have people forgotten how unacceptable this product is because the geese that produce it suffer so horribly by being force-fed? For decades, people have boycotted it in this country. We care about animal welfare in Winchester. The council cares about it too. For example, they have been vigilant about not allowing real fur to be sold in their markets. We don't want people behaving with disrespect towards our community, but it's hard to see how a little bar like that can make enough profit to support a McLaren. So let's hope they've gone soon, or else they could just stick to cheese and wine. Meanwhile, I hope the animal-loving people of Winchester will boycott anywhere that sells such a cool product. And this is from A.P. Lodge of Teg Down Meads, Winchester, and it's accompanied by a picture of a fabulous, what I assume must be the McLaren, but it has a parking ticket on it, so they probably can afford that anyway, if they can run a car like that.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
More prejudice.
No!
This letter is called Sticking Plasters, and it comes from John Airy. As the NHS moves slowly towards privatisation, forced upon it by total ignorance and lack of instigatory early education, where we continue to use sticking plaster politics stroke policy with successive governments, failing to deal with the root causes of what some would call self-inflicted illnesses, where AA meetings and rehab continue to struggle, where we now have special rooms for addicts to self-medicate with Class B to warn them off Class A, where the obese, who seem ignorant to early exercise, have stomach staples or weight loss injections to wean them off chocolate cake, regardless of what damage could be done. Then we have smokers weaning themselves off with vaping. What next? Paedophiles being weaned off their urges with Ken Dodd's Diddy Men. unless we invest more in early education, these people will continue to overwhelm not only our prison but also hospitals at the expense of other, some would say, more deserving patients. John Airy, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Richard. Why do you always get the amusing letters? Jackie, please.
Mine's entitled A Home Afloat, and it's from G.N. Barrett. We have so many of our citizens sleeping on the streets, and nothing is being done to house them, despite all the bureaucratic excrement, we are told. If councils were to check with these people and offer them a unit in the Bibby Stockholm, I don't think they would refuse. In fact, they would welcome it, as they would then have a roof over their heads, a place to sleep warmly, and to be able to cook hot food. Unlike the ungrateful migrants, these desperate people would not complain, as it certainly is the only way they would get a roof over their heads. And that's from J.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place in Alsford.
God, the bigots are out today.
Richard, behave. My letter is written by John Seeger Green. It's headed Keep Coitbury. Mr. James is right about Coitbury House. All too often, buildings that have potential use by the public are knocked down, leased, or sold to third parties because the local authority lacks either the imagination or the requisite funds to find an alternative user. Not only is this to the ratepayers' disadvantage, it causes enormous increases in carbon emissions, not only in the destruction of the existing building, but in the new building's materials and equipment used in replacing it. In Winchester, we need an arts and crafts centre for use by citizens and an art gallery where we may have displayed the collections hoarded by both the County Council and by the City Council, collections that rarely publicly see the light of day. Both of these requirements could be satisfied if Coitbury House were to be retained and made available to citizens and others. If the cry goes up, "We haven't got the money," then explain what money is required and one can then go about raising it. Craftspeople expect to pay rent for space, and it's not unusual for exhibitions of art to require an entrance fee, so there is potential future income to run the building. Despite protests, River Park Leisure Centre was handed over to Southampton University. Are we going to allow other such buildings disposed of in smoke-filled rooms rather than put them to use for the benefit of the public? That was written by John Seeger Green, St Cross Road, St Cross, Winchester. Margaret, please.
This is a letter from Martin C. Pittman. He's actually an ex-RHCH consultant, obstetrician and gynaecologist. And his letter's headed White Elephant. Last week's Hampshire Chronicle headline, "New Hospital Plan Suffers More Delays," January the 23rd, should not have come as any surprise. As I stated repeatedly at the Hampshire Together public listening events last year, funding for the project was neither secured nor guaranteed. Promise of an exciting new hospital for Basingstoke was little more than disingenuous, politically motivated potential vote winner and pipe dream. Predictably, both failed spectacularly. Your editorial comment that the Winchester A&E department and consultant-led maternity are staying for the foreseeable future is, I fear, a somewhat unrealistic and overly optimistic hope. It should be remembered that Plan B for the HHFT senior management and their Hampshire Together colleagues was to centralise these and many other acute services on the existing site of the North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke. Worryingly, and deliberately on their part, none of the options presented to the public included maintaining A&E and consultant-led maternity services in Winchester. Critically, centralisation of the latter service was discussed and planned years before the Hampshire Together project even launched. The genuine and, I suspect, imminent risk for the population of Winchester and its surrounds now is that the planned downgrading of acute medical services on the RHCH site will now occur by stealth, without the supposed and questionable benefit of a new local state-of-the-art hospital. This would be a disastrous worst of both worlds scenario. It became abundantly clear following the merger stroke takeover of the two NHS trusts, reinforced by the Hampshire Together plans, that a principal objective was to build a new acute hospital to benefit Basingstoke residents, to the direct detriment of Winchester's. I am dismayed that the majority of last week's local TV coverage of this announcement appeared to reinforce this by focusing on the delay to Basingstoke's new hospital build. Well over £10 million of precious taxpayer money was wasted nearly a decade ago when HHFT's senior management, against the advice of their local commissioners, first attempted to force through their new hospital for Basingstoke plans. I shudder to contemplate what multiple of this sum has been frittered away this time on this white elephant project. And that's from Martin C. Pittman of South Wanston.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
Terry Revel talks about toilets shame.
Oh.
Does this city council have no shame? The public toilets in Winchester are absolutely disgusting. Abbey Gardens and St. Maurice Covert are the only public toilets in the city now that the doors remain locked with regards to the Guild Hall. Last week I used the toilet facility, if you can call them that, and ended up apologising to some American tourists for the disgusting state of these facilities. Troughs went out of use in the 1940s. What must they think? It beggars belief. Here we are in the 21st century, the ancient capital of Wessex, and a cathedral city. Perhaps it might be a good idea if these councillors should take a tour of their parishes and visit their local village halls to see how toilet facilities should be. I suggest their first stop might be Otterbourne Village Hall. Terry Revel, Medicriff Close, Otterbourne.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
I have a letter from Christopher Gordon who asks, what is anti-democratic? While correspondents understandably deplore the cancellation of May's county council elections as anti-democratic, your article on possible council mergers and devolution on the January the 23rd is more significant regarding democracy's long-term operation. Please spare us another simplistic referendum on complicated constitutional matters that demand proper process. The last time there was any rigorous groundwork to underpin structural reform of local government was the Royal Commission that led to the 1972 Local Government Act. The compromise arrangement operating from 1974 was a two-tier structure and six metropolitan counties created outside London. The Commission's terms of reference included having regard to the size and character of areas in which these functions can be most effectively exercised and the need to sustain a viable system of local democracy. Under today's changed circumstances, that is surely what should still underlie any reforms, rationally constructed bottom-up, not imposed top-down. But within the UK's constitutional void, local government remains entirely at the mercy of party political tinkering for short-term electoral advantage. That seems partly to be what we are currently facing yet again. Thatcher in 1986 abolished the six large Labour-controlled urban counties, plus, ludicrously, London's strategic authority, largely out of vindictiveness. Major's rushed and inconsistent 1990s restoration of England's 1889 historic counties as local authority areas aimed to revive Conservative fortunes by engaging traditionalist Tory shire voters and enabling privatisation at the local level. Critics were rightly concerned that many of the unitaries created, Portsmouth and Southampton included, lacked populations or economies sizeable enough to provide the tax base required to support their new functions effectively. George Osborne's 2015 knee-jerk offer of devolution in return for mayors proved largely yet another gimmick. Devolution implies recognition of inappropriate central control. Under the principle of subsidiarity, an authority should only have responsibility for delivering functions that cannot effectively be performed at a subordinate level. In other words, political decisions should be taken as close to the citizen as possible. The Council of Europe in 1986 considered suspending the UK, a key 1949 founder, from membership as insufficiently democratic to belong, given the total absence of any constitutional protection for accountable elected government below national level. And that's from Christopher Gordon in Corns Close, Fulford in Winchester.
Thank you, Jackie. The next letter is written by Edward Fennell, who is the coordinator, the English Project's Captain Swing Riots Bicentenary Commemoration. Ooh, that's a title and a half. Anyway, it's headed Swing Success. Thank you very much for coming to the English Project's Captain Swing mayoral reception on Friday. We are most grateful to you for your coverage this week in the Chronicle. Much appreciated. So, we hope that you enjoyed it and that it gave you a sense of where the project has come so far and also a hint of where it is going. In brief, Friday's event marked the conclusion of phase one of the project, Getting Started. Over the past 2 years, we have established an organisation, launched a website, reached out to community and local history groups around the county, and taken part in two sets of Heritage Open Days. We also organised an innovative event in Mitchell-Deva to explore the literary perspectives of the swing era. So we feel that culminating in the mayoral reception, we are now established on the Hampshire cultural and historical landscape. Looking ahead through phase two over the next 3 years, broadening the reach. We want to continue to widen our own lecture series, stimulate and support local groups in swing-based performance and exhibitions, organise a swing documentary record exhibition at the Hampshire Record Office, establish an education initiative, populate the website with ever more detail, and develop collaborative projects with other organisations, such as Hampshire Genealogical Society and the University of Portsmouth. We also will seek local level funding to cover the cost of these activities. At the same time, we also want to begin looking ahead to the final phase three, the Captain Swing Bicentenary, to start developing ideas, outlining possible projects, and building long-term partnerships to support the high-profile and potentially costly events of the bicentenary. These would include exhibitions, drama performances, including public participatory events, high-level talks and debates, resources and possibly publications. There is no blueprint for these right now, but there is a very interesting creative challenge. We aspire to produce a programme of the highest standard, and we hope that you might want to continue to give coverage to what we feel is an important exercise in public education, giving insights both into historical issues and issues which continue to have great resonance today. Again, many thanks for coming along. I say that was written by Edward Fennell, who is the coordinator of the English Project's Captain Swing Riots Bicentenary Commemoration, from Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester. Margaret, please.
A charity boost, and this is a short letter from Helen Coker. We would like to thank those that gave a donation on December the 26th at the traditional Boxing Day meet in Mearnstoke. The street collection was £1,090 with no expenses, and that's a letter from Helen Coker of the Hursley Hambledon Hunt.
Thank you. Richard, please.
This from Peter Greaves. Deer in danger. Driving a school minibus on Monday on the road from Stockbridge to Winchester, I had to brake to let about 20 deer cross. They shot across at high speed, one after another. Interestingly, the deer cross this road at set points. This is the largest herd I've seen of medium-sized deer. It felt like we were driving through Woburn Park. I had prayed, literally a minute before, there would be no accidents with deer. I think the driver coming towards me on the other side of the road, he did not slow down, was the chief recipient of that prayer, as his car missed a deer by inches. Peter Greaves, Stockbridge Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. 01962 860836. Or you can email them news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write a letter to the editor at 5 Upperbrook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Well, we now go on to editorial comment, read by Richard, please.
And this is entitled Worries About the Future of W.H. Smith. People have long moaned about Winchester High Street. Back in the 80s, there were too many building societies and banks. Now there aren't enough. There were too many punk rockers hanging round the Buttercross and not enough cafes to keep young people off the streets. In the 90s and noughties, it was bookies, mobile phone shops and expensive clothes stores. Now, of course, there's a surfeit of cafes. We recently reported the closure of Earthian Zero Waste Shop in Parchment Street. This issue, there are reports on the closure of John Lewis of Hungerford Kitchen Retailers in Jury Street and Timpson in Upper Brook Street, although the latter is relocating to its other branch in the High Street. The worrying development is the proposed sale of 500 branches of W.H. Smith, including the one in Winchester. This shop has been a mainstay here for around 100 years. Together with Boots and Marks and Spencers, it's a vital part of the city centre. The Chronicle takes a more relaxed view than some about the High Street, long arguing that it is not dying, but evolving. But it would be a mental blow. Does that mean mortal blow? For W.H. Smith to no longer be there, and even if it is now much less busy than in the recent past. One thing that does not need to be stated is that no one is to blame. Many people wrongly think that the City Council has a say over which businesses move in. It doesn't. The market decides. If anyone wants to wrest control from the capitalist free market, then they need to elect an extreme left-wing government, which doesn't look very likely. However, having said that, the City Council has certainly got questions to answer over the deterioration of the two properties it owns down on the Broadway. They're now up for sale after standing empty for around 20 years. Years of rental income has been lost because they were considered too expensive to renovate. Frustrating.
Thank you, Richard. Now, it's the opinion piece now, written this week by Khalid Aziz, and it's headed Fatherhood Beckons. We are expecting, yes, pregnant. Well, we hope we are. And of course, at our advanced years, it's not exactly us, but our dog, through whom we increasingly live our lives vicariously. Our little working cocker bitch, Darcy, is just coming up to 4 years old. Such is her general demeanour, biddability, and all-round pleasure-giving character, we've been wanting to put her into pup for some time. If she is indeed expecting, and to be fair, it's rather too soon to say, I am sure her pups will be in demand, as she is cracking at finding game in the shooting field and retrieving them. Note to internet trolls, don't risk RSI with your bile. I really don't care what you think or that you believe your values should trump mine. I live in the country and enjoy all country pursuits. When I come into town, I like what that has to offer too. Darcy's liaison with the opposite sex was all supposed to happen this time last year. She was due in season last February, so we blocked out the necessary time. A window of around a week for mating, 10 days after she was first showed, followed by 63 days of pregnancy. Then 8 weeks until the puppies are ready to go into their new homes. We adjusted our holiday plans accordingly. We would have pups in the spring. Much easier than coping in the winter. It was all going like clockwork, except Darcy decided not to come into season, the normal 6 months after her last season. Instead, she was a full 3 months late. Apparently, this is not unusual for spaniels, who often tend not to follow the usual canine menstrual cycle. By the time she did come into season, we had made our travel plans and they would have clashed. Also, autumn into winter pups are not ideal, particularly for new owners trying to house train fair weather dogs who understandably resist going outside to whittle in the cold and rain. We shelved our plans. As 2025 broke, there were signs Darcy was coming into season again. Showing consists of seeing spots of blood on the kitchen floor. We'd already lined up an excellent stud dog in the shape of Todd, owned by a professional dog trainer. I was immediately back in touch to inquire whether Todd had had his Weetabix and was assured he was up for it. Although a few months younger than Darcy, Todd had already sired some 10 litters. He clearly knew what he was doing, which would be useful as our little dog was a blushing maiden. On the due date, we took Darcy off to see Todd in Stockbridge. You always take the bitch to the dog. Other way round, and you risk the dog remembering the route and finding his way back to bother the bitch again. Ah. In bouncing Todd, sniffing the air and then Darcy's nether regions, she looked at me imploringly, and I confessed to a slight pang of, what am I letting her in for? Todd set to his work with gusto. Darcy was also clearly keen, as after a couple of sniffs and licks, it's what dogs do, she flicked her tail to one side in a gesture that could only be construed as, take me. Todd climbed on board, and after a couple of thrusts, the coupling was complete, except for the bit which I now know is common not only to dogs but also foxes and wolves, the tie. With a little help from his owner, Todd turned around and there they were, stuck back to back like some kind of push me pull you, and there they stayed for half an hour. It can take twice as long. Darcy finally released him and the deed was done. Well, now we wait. I will report back. Exciting. I wasn't actually expecting to read all that, but there you go. we have another alternative look at the news in Belgarum, starting with Jackie, please.
Right. Cheese Night for Charity. A renowned Hampshire cheesemaker will join the Mayor of Winchester for a special event. Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith will host a cheese tasting and presentation evening with Mike Smales from Lyburn Cheese Farm. The event will take place at Abbey House on Wednesday, February the 19th from 7 p.m. Attendees will have the chance to learn about the heritage and craftsmanship behind some of Hampshire's finest cheeses. They will also enjoy a selection of award-winning cheeses and hear directly from Mike as he shares his expertise and stories from the farm. Proceeds from the evening will benefit the 2024-5 mayoral charities St John's Winchester, Winchester Radio, Winchester Sea Cadets and Hampshire History Trust. Councillor Gordon Smith said, "I'm very grateful to Mike for volunteering to host this talk and bringing samples of his cheeses too. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about not only the cheeses themselves, but also about Mike's business efforts and adventures. Our last mayoral charities event in Abbey House was a sellout and a fantastic entertaining evening, and I have no doubt that this will be just as enjoyable." Tickets are priced at £20 and are available online from ticketsource.co.uk to look for Mayor of Winchester Charities, and there's a picture of Mike Smales from Lyburn Cheese Farm and his white cheesemaker's coat and brimmed hat with row upon row upon row of huge wheels of yellow cheeses.
Thank you, Jackie. Margaret, the other Belgarum piece, please.
St John's is Charity of the Year. A Winchester estate agent has announced its Charity of the Year. Belgarum has chosen St John's Winchester for its 2025 campaign. Following a call for applications, the estate agent said it received more submissions than ever from local charities. St John's Winchester, a charity with a history of more than 900 years, focuses on community care and support. From its origins in almshouses, the charity has evolved into a contemporary living movement of care and reflection. The charity reach extends beyond its almshouses, playing a vital role in the community with its dementia support service.
Thank you, Margaret. Now, a quick look at things coming up in the air which might be of interest to you. On Monday, the 3rd of February, there is Say Aphasia, a drop-in group living with aphasia, which is a communication disability. It's a free drop-in group for people living with aphasia and other communication difficulties caused by stroke or head injury. And it is at St Peter's Church Pastoral Centre, Jury Street, Winchester. That's 10 a.m. on Monday the 3rd. Tuesday the 4th, Winchester Film Society's film at the Science Centre is Zone of Interest. That starts at 7 p.m. Saturday the 8th of February, Welcome to the Pleasures, Vivaldi's Gloria and Schubert's Mass. That is at St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, Winchester. Where have we got to now? Thursday the 13th, Wonderful Whales, Delightful Dolphins and a Pod of Porpoises. Now that is a talk about the above at the Badger Farm Community Centre. And that's at 7:30 in the evening on Thursday the 13th. Tuesday the 18th, another film from Winchester Film Society at the Science Centre, Le Samurai, that's Melville's iconic and hugely influential film, which stars Alain Delon as ice-cold hitman Jeff Costello. And finally, before we go on to the items of general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times of the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at 7:45 a.m. and set again at around 4:50 p.m. Right, so on to items of general news, starting with Margaret, please.
Drivers face penalties for snapping road crash. Drivers who thought it was a good idea to take snaps of an A road crash are set to be fined, receive points, and one will even be banned. Nine drivers will have been slapped with 6 points and fines after police caught them taking photos of the A34 crash on Saturday, January the 25th. The police said, good news, the driver involved in this morning's collision on the A34 south of Tothill was completely uninjured. We are on scene at a collision on the A34 between Tothill services and Lichfield. At the moment, both north and south carriageways are closed. We are hopeful to reopen one lane in each direction shortly. This is likely to cause disruption throughout the day due to barrier damage. Hampshire Roads Policing Unit, January the 25th, not such good news will soon be landing on the doormats of at least 9 drivers, including 4 HGV drivers, whom officers witnessed taking photographs of the scene on their phones. If this was you, please expect 6 points and a fine. To the young Portsmouth fan en route to the West Bromwich match, not only did Pompey lose, but you're going to lose your licence under the new driver rules. Yes, holding your phone and using it for any purpose while driving is distracting, dangerous and an offence. For everyone else, thank you for your incredible patience.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
Choir set to sing with new conductor. Winchester City Festival Choir is gearing up for a concert under the baton of their new conductor. Following her successful debut at the choir's carol concert in December, Barbara Hoffling will lead the choir in their first full concert on Saturday, February the 8th. Her enthusiasm and innovative teaching methods have already begun to bear fruit, with choir members learning new techniques and approaches. The concert will feature Henry Purcell's Welcome to All the Pleasures, Schubert's Mass in G, Vivaldi's Gloria, and works by Bach and Mozart. Purcell's work, blending sensuality with a celebration of St. Cecilia, showcases the range of pieces that the choir will tackle. Schubert's Mass in G and Vivaldi's Gloria, known for their uplifting qualities, complement the repertoire. The choir, eager to share their hard work, is hopeful for a good turnout and encourages as many people as possible to attend. For further information, the choir's website is wcfchoir, or lowercase, .org, where you can be led to an area to choose to buy tickets.
Thank you, Richard. That was very carefully read.
Sorry.
Jackie, please.
MP's fears for Ukraine. The Member of Parliament for Winchester has grilled the PM over the emergence of superbugs in Ukraine. At the Prime Minister's questions in the House of Commons today, that was January the 15th, Danny Chambers MP asked what Sir Keir Starmer and his government are doing to help Ukrainian medics return their soldiers to the front line in the face of new and highly resilient bacteria which could arrive in the UK soon. Mr. Chambers said, "Mr. Speaker, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has led to the emergence of bacteria that are severely resistant to multiple antibodies, and this is now seriously delaying the return of injured soldiers to the front line. But just like Mr. Putin, we know that these superbugs do not respect national borders, and it is only a matter of time before we start to detect them in our NHS hospitals. And we know that antimicrobial resistance is a huge challenge facing us at the moment." He asked, "Will the Prime Minister consider supporting the Ukrainian war effort by providing rapid diagnostic tests, which can be used in the field and in civilian hospitals, which would not only enable us to diagnose and treat these resistant infections more quickly, returning soldiers back to the front line more quickly, but would also provide valuable surveillance data to help global public health and protect our NHS from these dangerous bacteria?" Prime Minister Keir Starmer replied, "I thank him for raising this, and he knows our support for Ukraine is ironclad."
Thank you, Jackie. My story is headed, "How Secondhand Books Are Helping to Pay for Mill Repairs." The Secondhand National Trust bookshop is going from strength to strength after several years of business. The bookshop at Winchester City Mill in Bridge Street is run by Welcome Services assistants Claire Tyrrell and Emma Sumpster. The shop opened 5 years ago, just before the COVID pandemic, and is located just inside the mill's front door. Claire said, "It opened just before COVID. It is doing much better. We have more people coming in for the bookshop than people just visiting the National Trust. Emma and I both love books, so we spend a lot of time on the displays." Emma said, "All National Trust bookshops are different, and they can be located in different places. They can be in barns, for example. This is our visitor reception area, where people walk into. Some people think we still have a shop, but with local people, we are definitely becoming as much a place for people to come for second-hand books as they do for the mill itself. It's great because people can come in here, shop for second-hand books, but then it's free admission site, so people can go upstairs and go into the mill. As my manager says, there's a strong cause messaging, because you can go downstairs, see the old wheel that isn't working at the moment, realise that we're raising money to get it fixed, and obviously it is then a cyclical thing where you're buying books and the money is coming straight back into this property and goes towards the property. The pair have worked to display the second-hand books in interesting ways, including a Brooker Prize display, a world fiction area, a recommended area, and a curve of books by the front door. Emma said, "There's something for everyone, something for a more discerning reader, something for anybody who loves reading, to be honest. We rely heavily on donations, and some people don't realise that we're here. There are a lot of second-hand bookshops in the town. But it's great, and we love donations because that's what we rely on. Claire said, we're lucky because we have the bookshop and we do like books, so we spend our time curating it and making it look good, but also keeping it fresh as well. Margaret, please.
Graveyard Group fears it may have to close. A Winchester charity fears new council rules on using power tools could force it to close. The Friends of St Giles Hill Graveyard has been told they cannot use the essential tools in the cemetery that dates back to medieval times. The ban, because of insurance issues, was imposed earlier this month after a phone call with a representative of Winchester City Council. The Friends say power tools are vital, as other inefficient methods wouldn't be enough to control pest plants such as old man's beard, ivy and brambles. The council has agreed to meet the charity on Friday to try to resolve the issue. Dave Stewart, chairman of the Friends, said the team would be unable to carry on and added it would be devastating it is for the group to see the ban continue. The tragedy is that our volunteers love coming here. If we had to abandon the thing because of this, it would be tragic for them as well as us. Established in 2014, the Friends began their work on the site on an ad hoc basis to nurture the land and wildlife while building friendships within the local community. The organisation became a charity in 2019 to get insurance for the use of the lawnmower. When the graveyard closed at the end of 2021, the council formally took over control, occasionally sending people to help maintain the land alongside the Friends. The charity also held meetings with the council to ensure there was a good relationship and that everything was in order. The last of these meetings came last April, in which the representatives of the council and the Friends signed a memorandum of understanding. Dave Stewart believes this may have been the beginning of the issue. At that stage, there was the first inkling we really had that maybe there was a problem. We didn't hear anything more from them until last Friday, when they just said there was a blanket ban on power tools. The group took to Facebook to announce the ban, receiving an outcry of support from locals. A council's spokesman said, "We're very sorry to have caused upset to the volunteers of the Friends of St Giles Hill Graveyard. By no means was our intention to ever undermine or undervalue the incredible work they do. While we had everyone's safety in mind, it's clear that we should have handled this situation better and offered solutions. We have been in contact directly with the chair of the volunteers group and have arranged to meet so we can offer a full explanation and a resolution. We absolutely want the brilliant work the Friends do to continue, and we will work with them to ensure it can, should they wish to do so." The council said it hopes it can resolve the issue after a meeting with the trustees. And this is accompanied by three pictures of these volunteers with their power tools, which are just ordinary garden mowers, up in the churchyard.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
Prolific paedophile locked up for 18 years. A Hampshire paedophile has been sentenced to 18 years in prison for a string of sex offences over more than 40 years in Havant, Denmead, Southsea, Hambledon and Chichester in West Sussex. David Anthony Cotton, 60, of Middle Parkway, Lee Park, was convicted last November of 28 sexual offences involving 10 different victims spanning the late 1970s to 2021. After a three-year investigation, Cotton was charged with a range of indecent assaults and other forms of sexual activity with children, both boys and girls. Cotton, who was also known as Big Dave to many, denied all offences, but a jury at Portsmouth Crown Court convicted him on all counts following a five-week trial. He was remanded into custody by the judge, who stated that Cotton is a prolific offender and a danger to society. He appeared again last Wednesday at the same court, where he was jailed for 18 years and given a further 5-year extension to his license period due to the judge deeming him to be a dangerous offender. He's also been ordered to sign the sex offenders register for life and will be subject to a sexual harm prevention order. Detective Constable Holly Shelton from the Specialist Operation Amberstone team said, "I'm very pleased with this result, and the totality of the sentence was met by applause from a very full courtroom today, full of victims, witnesses and other members of the public. The sentence is significant, given the challenging nature of investigating non-recent offences where evidence can be more difficult to obtain, but I'm very happy that Cotton will finally face justice for his despicable crimes. The sentencing is a result of outstanding bravery by the victims in coming forward. And while this sentence in no way will negate what has happened to them, I hope they can now begin to move forward, knowing that justice has been served and safe in the knowledge that he can no longer harm any other children. I also hope this sentence will reassure other victims that will be listened to when reporting similar incidents. We encourage other victims to come forward and speak to us. We take allegations of this nature extremely seriously and work hard to bring offenders to justice."
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Disruption charge plan. Hampshire County Council is considering a new disruption charge scheme to reduce road delays. The plan would target contractors on the county's busiest roads at peak times. The scheme aims to complement the existing permitting system, encouraging companies or agencies to better plan work, carry it out outside busy hours, and cut down time taken. It involves charging a daily fee for the duration of the work, including any delays caused. Any surplus revenue beyond basic scheme operation costs would be earmarked for innovative projects aimed at reducing roadworks disruption. Subject to new national legislation due later this year, a portion of the income could also be reinvested into highway maintenance. The proposals were due to be discussed by the Council's Cabinet Lead for Highways and Waste, Councillor Lulu Bauman, on Tuesday. If given the go-ahead, the draft proposals would then be opened up for wider consultation this year. Final recommendations would be developed by the County Council before formal approval is sought from the Department for Transport. The aim is to have the scheme operational by 2026. The concept of disruption charging, also known as lane rental, is already in place in several parts of the UK, and local schemes must adhere to national legislation.
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is headed Festival Licence Set for Council Review. Boomtown's premises licence is due to be finally reviewed by Winchester City Council after it was postponed at the end of last year. The premises licence will be discussed by City Councillors today. As previously reported, its licence has been due to be reviewed last November after an application was submitted by the police concerned by the death of a 22-year-old man who was attending the festival. However, the police withdrew the application, with the subcommittee deciding to postpone the decision despite the presence of members of the public who had supported the police stance. This latest review will indeed consider the views of 17 members of the public, with several complaining about noise levels. Sue Herdman from Cheriton wrote, "I have personally never attended the festival, but the people who I have spoken to who have been shocked at the blatant use of drugs in plain sight of other festival goers. It seems strange that the law is not followed or enforced just because the event is taking place in the countryside and not within a permanent building. I would also like to make representation about the prevention of public nuisance. The amplified music noise from Boomtown travels for miles in all directions. It is unreasonable to allow music to continue until 4 a.m. in the morning just because the event is held in the countryside. David Payne, also of Cheriton, said, "The Boomtown Music Festival has had a reputation for several years of being soft on unlawful drugs, and the recent fatality of a 22-year-old man is but the most recent, as there have been several others in preceding years to which reference was made by the police in their application for review. I can see no reason why residents in the rural parts of Winchester District should be expected to suffer noise nuisance so late at night, as this undermines the licensing objective, prevention of public nuisance. If the license is allowed to continue, I request that the noise conditions are amended so that amplified live and recorded music ceases at either 11 p.m. or midnight on some nights." David Templeton of Hinton Ampner said, "It is well past time for redress. The current situation is both intolerable and very annoying, and I most urgently urge that if the license is allowed to continue, it should be amended such that amplified music ceases at either 11 p.m. or midnight on all nights." Boomtown has been contacted for comment. Margaret, please.
Mudlark tackles a new menace, vapes. On a freezing January day during the recent cold snap, those walking along the weirs might have been surprised to see Jane Eastman, Winchester's premier mudlark, waist-deep in the Itchen, bent double as she scoured the riverbed, not so much for treasure as trash. The temperature that day was zero, but Jane argued that it wasn't so bad because the river is always around 10 degrees centigrade. "I just get into this sort of flow state," she added. She explained that there is a new kind of rubbish building at the bottom of Hampshire's rivers. Jane said, "I have come in for an hour or so, mostly to pick up vapes. There's not too much plastic because it tends to wash straight down the river, but with vapes, the kigs just come along and throw them away. They're so brightly coloured you can't miss them." She added that while her finds in the past include a Dutch sabre and a 120-year-old jar of pickles, winter is not exactly the best time to scavenge. "I'm not finding anything at the moment, but you've got to be in it to win it," said Jane. "This whole stretch of river has basically been a rubbish dump since Roman times. It's constantly eroding, and of course, we've had the rains recently. The water levels are going up and down, and it churns everything up." In spite of this dearth of treasure, she had, however, managed to find a few interesting items. Jane said, "I found a Victorian clay pipe, and it's got some spikes on it. It's kind of interesting. There's also a King George V coin, and another strange metal thing." Jane spends much of her time mudlarking across Hampshire's rivers and publishes her finds on her Instagram page, My Ordinary Treasure. Oh, that's the name of the Instagram page, yeah. My Ordinary Treasure. The mother of two is a jeweller by trade, but has found her occupation, has taken a back seat to this newfound passion. Reflecting on how it all began, Jane continued, "I did a bit of bottle digging when I was younger, but I didn't know it was a thing. I remember finding a Victorian jam jar sticking out of a bank on a country lane and hooking it out. Accidentally happening upon an old Victorian bottle dump is where this sort of interest began. I was turned off by history when I studied it at A-level, but now I'm completely obsessed. It's personal, it's the real people, it's the average person. It's not the kings and the queens, and it is lovely to find gold coins and that sort of thing, but it is the things that people used in their lives that most meaningful to me." And there's some pictures of Jane in the weirs with water up to the top of her legs, and also holding the coins that she found there.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
Newly resurfaced play park reopens. A play park popular with Winchester families has reopened after a new surface was installed. The Abbey Gardens play area was closed on January the 16th by Winchester City Council to allow workers to install a new rubber paving between the equipment. a team from Infinity Playground worked on providing an improved all-year surface as part of a planned programme of upgrade works. The council described the work as creating a safer and more enjoyable playing surface for the children, as well as eliminating muddy areas and providing a better experience for all. The grounds reopened on January the 23rd, with the total cost of the project being over £20,000. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Cabinet Member for Community and Engagement, is delighted to see the work completed. "We're really pleased to say the play park reopened. It's such a popular play area for local families, and it's brilliant that our contractor could complete the work so quickly. The new surfacing will help to ensure that the fun can continue no matter what the weather." The last refurbishment of the park was in September 2022, when a new slide and a replacement train were brought in, but the reopening was delayed until April 2023 due to poor weather.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Woman drowned in pond named. A woman who died in a pond in Alsford has been named, an inquest heard. The body of Claire Lorraine Logan, 56, of Oak Hill, Alsford, was pulled from Old Alsford Pond on Sunday, January the 19th. The inquest into her death was opened by Assistant Coroner Kieran Chahal Musgrave on Tuesday, January the 28th. Mrs. Chahal Musgrave said that Mrs. Logan was found unresponsive in water at the rear of a property in the paddock, Broad Street, on January the 19th. Police officers and paramedics attended the scene, but life-saving efforts were unsuccessful, the hearing heard. The preliminary cause of death has been given as drowning. Mrs. Chahal Musgrave has adjourned the inquest to Winchester Coroner's Court on October the 27th. She has ordered a GP report, family statement, and police and witness statements to be prepared.
Thank you, Jackie. My news item is headed, "Water firm agrees to fund tests for pollution." Excuse me. Southern Water has agreed to fund testing equipment at sites along the rivers Test, Itchen and Blackwater. The initiative follows campaigning work by Pan Parish River Pollution Forum. There has been widespread public anger at the number of times sewage has been dumped into local rivers after heavy rainfall. The announcement was made by Lib Dem parliamentary spokesman and forum member Jeff Cooper. It follows a series of meetings between Southern Water and the forum since Horton Parish Council purchased its own water testing equipment last year. Mr. Cooper said, "The Horton testing equipment is already providing excellent data and insight, but it is only able to cover one small part of the river test. The plan is to have a string of similar devices running the length of the river from source, which will give us real-time data and provide valuable insights into river health, impacts from pollution, and act as an early warning system. I'm extremely grateful to Southern Water for funding this equipment. The proposed testing sites were hand-picked by the river keepers who look after our precious chalk streams and waterways. It is their expertise that has guided this project." Also present at the meeting was Geoff Edervane, Environment and Water Quality Lead at Southern Water, and Matt Owen Farmer, a senior ecologist from the Environment Agency. The Environment Agency's presentation showed how limited current testing and data availability is. Since 2014, only 50 invertebrate samples have been taken along the entirety of the River Test north of Romsey. Councillor Alistair Dougal, chair of the forum, said, "We are delighted that Southern Water will be funding these water monitors, which will monitor the water quality of the River Test on an hourly basis and provide us with invaluable data down the whole length of the river and alert us to any pollution incidents. I want to thank Jeff Cooper for all his hard work on this, and to thank Seth Crosthwaite and his fellow river keepers in identifying the locations for the monitors to keep us and give us the best coverage. The Pan Parish Forum was set up a year ago to campaign for clean water in the River Test and to stop pollution in all its forms. We have established a constructive and ongoing dialogue with Southern Water, and we are very grateful to them for their support with this project. Margaret, please.
Leo set for festival debut, 5 years on. Leo Sayer is set to perform at the Wickham Festival 5 years later than planned. The Shoreham-born singer was originally scheduled to headline the four-day event in 2020, but it was cancelled due to the COVID pandemic. Living in Australia has made it difficult for organisers to fit Wickham into Sayer's schedule. However, he is now confirmed to perform at the festival on Saturday, August the 2nd. He will share the stage with fellow 70s icon Tom Robinson. The festival's lineup also includes Fishman's Friends and Talisk on Friday, August the 1st, with Oyster Band, Peak Bog Fairies, Kate Rusby and Reg Neuros performing on the Sunday. Peter Jegwin, the festival organiser, said, "It has taken a few years to get him, but we are delighted. Leo Sayer will be playing at Wickham at last." He added, "We were desperately disappointed when the 2020 festival was cancelled, along with just about every other music event in the country, and I know Leo Sayer was very upset too. We had several conversations where we did everything we could to try and make it work, but in the end it just wasn't possible." Leo Sayer expressed his excitement about finally being able to perform. He said, "I was generally very disappointed not to be able to play Wickham in 2020. It was a horrible time for so many people, and we kept hoping the event would be able to go ahead and give everyone a much needed lift. As it turned out, all major events were cancelled, which was so sad as this would have been a special one for me. So I am thrilled to be able to sign up for this year's event. We'll make it a great night to make up for what we missed out on before." The pandemic severely affected the musical festival industry, with many long-standing events forced to scale back or shut down. However, Chagwin is grateful for Wickham's loyal fan base, he said. "Like everyone else, we were hit hard by the forced cancellation, and it has been a struggle to keep going. But as Leo Sayer says, the show must go on, and it will. 4-day tickets are currently on sale at £220, with under 16s admitted at half price, and under 10s paying just £10. Day tickets start at £60, with a weekend camping pass starting at £40.
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
A whale of a time at the cathedral. It's probably a first in the cathedral's 1,000-year history. A giant model of a sperm whale hanging from the ceiling. However, a new exhibition in which the cathedral into the depths of the ocean is putting the spotlight on one of the Earth's most intelligent animals. Whales, A Deeper Dialogue, features three massive hanging fabric models of whales, the largest being 18 feet long. Exhibition creator and sculptor Tessa Campbell-Fraser said, "I tried as much as I could to keep a tiny carbon footprint and try to use recycled things, predominantly that are made of recycled ghost material, which when we went out with Ghost Fishing in UK in Plymouth, they do an incredible job in the UK waters dredging up any of the stuff that's been snagged by fishermen or has been dumped. All the ghost net that is in my whales is from around Britain." The exhibition also uses blue lights that stream across the cathedral, as well as the noises of whale clicks, which are echoed through the speakers around the cathedral. There could potentially be a way to have basic communication with whales, according to Tessa, 58, who said, "There's an American science organisation which is trying to gather the code clicking of the sperm whale and feed it into programmes like ChatGPT and AI to try to find a way of decoding the clicks, because they've already discovered whales have around 26 different dialects. For example, one pod could sound Glaswegian and another pod can sound Liverpudlian. and they wouldn't be able to understand each other. Tessa added. So they're hoping to look at a little bit into interspecies communication and then use it for boat strikes. In a perfect world, they could put an audio clip on boats, which would drive whales away from the boats and protect them from harm. Rowley Ream, Vice Dean at Winchester Cathedral, said, "The cathedral is for all sorts of creativity. We love the fact that we are creative beings and that we do all sorts of extraordinary things. And our role as stewards of the planet, we see the cathedral's role as supporting the common good in society, as well as, of course, focusing on Christianity. But when it comes to the world outside, we want to support anybody who's got good intentions to build peace, build security for our world in a constructive way." The exhibition started in Messam's West Gallery in Wiltshire, where it drew more than 20,000 visitors. The exhibition is set to run until February the 26th, and the article is accompanied by some huge, dramatic pictures of three vast whales hanging up in the cathedral and shot with blue, ultramarine, purple lights. Looks very dramatic.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
It's drinks all round after Mel's hole-in-one. A woman recently achieved a feat many golfers can only dream of, a hole-in-one. Mel Gates, who has been a member of the Alresford Golf Club after getting into the sport in 2021, where she currently holds a 26 handicap, was taking part in a doubles competition with her husband, Rob. Mel, 45, said, "We were playing against two other players and we were being let through by the woman I was playing with. She was a much better golfer than me, so I was pretty nervous, but with a bit of luck, I managed to get it straight in. We could see it all the way as it went in, which was nice, as there were eight people stood on the tee, and we all cheered when we saw it go in. It pitched just short of the green, bounced on, and then rolled 6 feet or so into the hole. The hole-in-one was on the 10th hole, which is 125 yards long. For the shot, she used a 5-iron hybrid Callaway club. When talking about how the rest of the round went, Mel said, "Unfortunately, we were in a pairs match, which we lost, but I can't say I minded too much. At least we won that particular hole." Mel was not presented with an award, nor had her name put on the wall, as this was discontinued at the club recently. As per golf tradition, Mel did have to pay for a round of drinks at the clubhouse.
Thank you, Jackie. My piece is Fraud Case Travel Agent Rebailed by Police. A Winchester travel agent arrested for fraud after allegedly scamming numerous clients has been rebailed. The woman, 39, is under police investigation after reports that she took customers' money without booking the flights or hotels that she had promised. Now her bail period, which has been due to expire on December the 8th, has been extended until March the 8th. No charges have yet been brought against her. InteliTravel, the company the woman worked through, confirmed in a statement that he was aware of the issues regarding the woman, who has not been named by police, adding that it was taking the matter very seriously. It stated the following: "We have alerted all the relevant authorities, including the industry organisations, and are working closely with them. InteliTravel is in constant communication with all affected customers," the company added. "We are unable to provide any further information at this time due to the nature of the ongoing investigations." It added, "InteliTravel has robust anti-fraud measures and a commitment to working with industry peers to eradicate fraud." Margaret, please.
Town Council bid plea by Lib Dems. The knock-on effects of devolution are already being seen as Winchester Town Forum votes to ask for the establishment of a town council. At a town forum last Thursday, members voted to request that Winchester City Council conducts a review over establishing a town council covering the central unparished area of Winchester. This comes after Hampshire County Council voted to create a combined authority across the wider region and requests that the government be included in the devolution priority programme. The forum, comprising councillors who represent the Lib Dems, agreed unanimously to request that the City Council explores options for establishing a town council that would have the same powers as a parish council. It would replace the town forum and likely have greater powers. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said that while she had originally been against the establishment of a town council when it was proposed in 2019, she has since changed her mind following HCC's decision on devolution. She said, "Most of all, this is about how we can look after our town in a changing situation. We all love Winchester. The world loves it. The number one tourist destination this year. We get to visit it every day, and that is amazing, and we want to keep it special. We need to have something that is financially sustainable. There have been examples where new town councils have had considerable considerations foisted on them, particularly when you look at historic buildings. And we are not just talking about the city council. The county has a lot as well, and we do not want to be in a situation where we are looking after everything." Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "I too have changed my view of this. In fact, when we considered that prior, it all seemed a bit too much, but now is the right time. Some people felt that they did not have enough say locally when the discussion was taking place 6 or 7 miles away, and we are looking at that becoming 20 to 30 miles. Councillor Chris Westwood said, "The unparished areas of our district need a voice, and the town forum is that forum for those areas of our district. Should the local government reorganisation move forward, the town forum no longer becomes that forum. The residents still need a place to air their views and a body to act on those views." Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "It is very reassuring in my mind that the town forum is speaking with one voice on this issue about the importance of having this review."
Thank you, Margaret. Richard, please.
Store brings back free coffee for its members.
Hooray!
Waitrose was due to relaunch its free hot drink without purchasing anything for members scheme on Monday. The loyalty scheme included this luxury when it was introduced in 2013, which saw some customers queue up just to get their drink. In 2017, the supermarket changed its terms and conditions to discourage freeloaders by making them buy something in store beforehand. After the benefit was scrapped almost entirely during the pandemic, it was reintroduced to customers in 2022, still under the condition of a purchase. Winchester Waitrose shoppers have had mixed views over the comeback of this benefit. However, Barbara, a 75-year-old loyalty member, was delighted. "We're lucky to get it back, and have the paper, and to get good service. Don't discontinue it again." Brian Stevens, 68, also a loyalty card with the store, is not tempted by the free coffee and would rather see more consideration put into their voucher system. "I don't use it at all. I prefer going to a proper coffee shop."
Jackie, please.
Film Spotlight on the Disabled in Holocaust. A theatre group has made a documentary to highlight the 250,000 disabled people murdered in the Holocaust. Blue Apple Theatre, based in Winchester, made the film to mark Holocaust Memorial Day on Monday. The group, performers with learning disabilities, has been working with students and staff at the University of Winchester to create the documentary. The film, titled Blue Apple Holocaust Memorial Project, contrasts historical images of concentration camps with modern ones, showing that many people with learning disabilities today live fulfilling lives. Richard Conlon, Blue Apple's artistic director, said, "It is important to acknowledge this terrible time from history and to remember, but we must also recognise that we have moved on. We live in much more enlightened times, but we shouldn't assume that will always be the case, and we must remain vigilant." The film will be shared with sister organisations across Europe, including in Poland, the Czech Republic, and Belgium. Mr. Conlon added, "Despite being a small Winchester-based arts charity, we're actually engaged in a sort of ongoing international debate about the role of people with a learning disability in civic life. Our performers and participants know that those who went before them had bigger challenges to face, but the journey isn't over. We've had conversations about how we can't take all recent advances for granted. They may not stay forever unless we actively advocate for them." The documentary was edited by third-year film production students Hope Lines and Vasily Evangelou. Hope said, "It's been really interesting to work for outside clients on such a sensitive topic." Vasily said, "It's been great to develop our professionalism. We've had to contact and talk to a lot of different people and work to a deadline." Rob Ferrin, program leader for film production, said, "We are incredibly proud of the work done by our film production students, Vasily and Hope, in partnership with the team from Blue Apple Theatre and all the performers involved in the project. To be able to come together in an expression of creative collaboration and mark the 80th anniversary of the events of the Holocaust is an inspiring and emotive achievement for all involved." The documentary was made using historical images sourced from the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust, the German Federal Archive, and site images from Ken Parry. To watch the documentary, you can go to YouTube.
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we've got for you for this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all our support team for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Margaret.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from Peter, me, until next time, goodbye.